You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. He was the priest entrusted with recruiting and guiding young men thinking of becoming Catholic priests. And he was pastor of a parish in the Catholic Diocese of Saginaw. But Father Robert DeLand stands accused of sexual assault and gross indecency between male persons based on the accusations of a 17-year-old high school student and a 21-year-old man. And local law enforcement says his bishop, Joseph Sistone, and the diocese are not cooperating as they should with their investigation, which led to police raiding the bishop's home last month, as well as the offices in the cathedral rectory of the Diocese of Saginaw. Now, this is not the first time a priest sex abuse scandal has been connected with Bishop Sistone. He was an auxiliary bishop in Philadelphia when that archdiocese and its late cardinal, Anthony Bevilacqua, came under immense scrutiny for an apparent effort to cover up sexual abuse committed by its priests. A grand jury report strongly condemned the archdiocese for the way it handled sexual predator priests. David O'Reilly is a 35-year veteran reporter of the Philadelphia Inquirer. He spent much of that time covering religion and the Catholic Church. David, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us what happened in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia in the 1990s.
Well, you should probably reach back even further than that. The grand jury report that you cited there actually looked back to, about 1970s, maybe even 1950. And they issued a devastating report in 2005, discovered probably hundreds of abuses, priests, and thousands of victims. And they issued an appendix to the grand jury report going into great detail on 65 abusive priests, but probably said there are many more we'll never know about.
Tell us some of what kind of abuse and some of the things the grand jury talks about in its report.
Well, I actually have a copy of our newspaper from that day issuing that report. And I will read you something from the report itself. It says, sexually abusive priests were left quietly in place or recycled to unsuspecting new parishes, vastly expanding the number of children who were abused, the report said. The grand jury said, we find it hard to comprehend the full extent of the malevolence and suffering visited on this community by powerful, respected, and rapacious priests.
Malevolence, that is a powerful, powerful word.
Yes. Yes, they described it as an immoral cover-up. That was in the opening paragraph of the grand jury report. It was the banner headline in our newspaper on September 22nd of 2005. It still reverberates across the Philadelphia Archdiocese. It's one of the largest and oldest in the country.
Now, was anyone charged or convicted in all of this?
Well, yes. That's a long answer to that. The grand jury investigators found themselves enormously frustrated as they discovered how great the extent of abuse was. But the statute of limitations in Pennsylvania had expired, and there was nothing they could do about it. Eventually, they went back. There was another report in 2011, and that led to the indictment and conviction and imprisonment of the secretary for clergy in the archdiocese, a Monsignor William Lynn, who was identified as having been Bevilacqua's true right-hand man in all of this and the active player in reassigning abusive priests secretly. And he ended up spending, I think, the better part of a year in jail for that. The only person, to my knowledge, in a Catholic diocese or archdiocese has actually served prison time for these abuses.
Now, what did the grand jury say about Bishop Sistone's role in all of this?
In truth, Sistone was probably identified as a somewhat on the margins player, certainly compared to Monsignor Lynn that I mentioned. But nevertheless, there were two incidents identified in the grand jury report. He had been the vicar for administration starting in 1998, but prior to that, he was the assistant vicar for administration. And the vicar for administration, you have to understand, serves as sort of the chief operating officer in an archdiocese like Philadelphia. He just played a role in a lot of administrative duties. And the grand jury report said that in the early 90s, I think it was 1994, when he was assistant, he had witnessed, quote unquote, witnessed the shredding of personnel documents related to 35 abuse priests. This is a real cover-up, but he may not have been in a position of enough authority to have ordered it. He may have played a role in it, but nevertheless, he did witness it, and to a certain degree, you know, he wasn't objecting morally to this. So there was some blame assigned to him for that.
And that has certainly made it into headlines here in Michigan as this story in Saginaw has blown up.
Yes.
There's also something that has not been so widely reported on, that he was involved in silencing a sister, Joan Scarry. Tell us about this.
This involves a priest, now deceased, by the name of Edward DiPaoli. And Father Paoli, in 1985, pleaded guilty to possession of child pornography. He was put on probation, got counseling, was returned to parish life, but then again in 1992, he was caught with it again, with pornography, child pornography. And so he was becoming a problem priest. There were letters that went back and forth between this aforementioned Monsignor Lynn and this priest, Edward DiPaoli, about where he should go. Should he retire? What should we do with him? And they ended up sending him to a parish, St. Gabriel's, in the suburbs. And the sister Scarry, Sister Joan, began to get sort of suspicious or curious about him because he seemed to have no duties. I think he was not even hearing confessions. He might have been saying Mass every now and then. And she went to the pastor and said, sort of like, what's going on with him? She was head of religious instruction, so she had an important role in the parish. And the pastor told her to be quiet, don't ask questions. Well, several months later, in 1995, I think it was, 1996, Sister Joan opened a package that had arrived at her residence by mistake. It was addressed to Father DiPaoli, and she discovered it was child pornography. This is the first she knew about that. Again, she went to the pastor and said, this is wrong, and he told her to be quiet. She mailed the magazine down to the cardinal's office and saying, does this man belong in a parish? Shouldn't something be done? And that's when it appears that Bishop Sistone began to maneuver for her ouster. And there seems to be back and forth conversations with the pastor, who was protecting him. And instead of sending DiPaoli away, Sister Joan was ordered to leave her role as religious director. She was basically fired.
I've got to ask, was justice done for victims in Philadelphia?
Well, depending on what justice would mean, the statute of limitations greatly limited criminal convictions to the enormous frustration of the district attorney's office. But also Pennsylvania state law, the statute of limitation was very strict, unyielding for lawsuits. Since that grand jury report came out, the state legislature did create a set of statute of limitation laws that are much more generous to the victim. And now it can be, I think it's at least 30 years on criminal convictions, and I think lifetime for civil lawsuits. But for the young people who were so severely damaged in the 70s and 80s and 90s, there's not really been much relief.
And we should note Cardinal Bevilacqua passed away.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
Yes, he did.
What was your impression, David, of Bishop Sistone when you covered the Catholic Church and had contact with him in Philly?
Well, I came on as religion reporter in 1995, and by then he had been the assistant vicar for administration, and then a few years later he was in charge of the communications office within the archdiocese. There's about four auxiliaries. I found Sistone to be rather aloof, prickly, suspicious. He took offense at the most benign stories. So the Philadelphia Inquirer is the enemy of the Catholic Church. And I would sort of get this relayed to me by his staff, the staffers, the lay people that worked in the communications office. And I sort of began to perceive in him something of a fortress mentality, that the Catholic Church was under siege, there were enemies, and a sort of a bunker or fortress mentality that it had to be defended against his enemies. He was not an easy person to deal with. I offered several times to meet with him to explain something in a story, why we wrote it a certain way. Always refused. And I think what you see now playing out in Saginaw is some of that same mindset, if the stories are correct, where he still seems to have thought that you have to protect the clergy and the institution of the church, and sometimes putting that ahead of the vulnerable, the children and their families who have been abused.
David O'Reilly, 35-year veteran reporter of the Philadelphia Inquirer. David, thank you so much for talking with us on Stateside.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you.
Saginaw County Prosecutor John McColgan Jr. has announced he has formed a special investigative team to coordinate and investigate allegations of abuse involving officials within the Catholic Diocese of Saginaw. We requested an interview with the prosecutor's office, and they did not get back to us by airtime today. Now, the Saginaw Diocese sent us a statement, and it says, quoting here, "It would be inappropriate for the Diocese of Saginaw to comment on the specifics due to the ongoing criminal investigation as well as pending civil litigation. The diocese has and continues to encourage any victims of clergy abuse or anyone who knows a victim to make direct contact with law enforcement."